Welcome to the Deep Dive Learner. It is really great to have you with us today. I want you to imagine a scenario for a second.
A pretty wild scenario, honestly.
Right, yeah. Let's say it's Monday morning. A Chinese startup, maybe, just a handful of people in a co-working space somewhere, wakes up and decides that an entire legacy industry, say global corporate consulting, is just fundamentally inefficient.
And not just a minor disagreement with how they do things.
Exactly. I don't mean they just have a philosophical disagreement. They literally believe it is operationally broken. So on Monday, they start mapping it out.
Right.
On Tuesday, they pinpoint the weak spots.
Yeah.
On Wednesday, they deploy AI agents to compress those weaknesses into highly modular automated systems. And by Thursday, a functioning AI-assisted institution actually exists to replace a massive chunk of that legacy firm. I mean, where on Monday there was only an idea, by Thursday there's a fully scaled capability stack.
It sounds completely absurd. Like, if someone pitched that to you even just a few years ago, you'd think they were writing a sci-fi screenplay.
Oh, totally. I would have laughed.
Right. But the reality is, this isn't hyperbole anymore. And it's crucial to understand that this isn't simply about AI making an existing process a little bit faster.
It's way deeper than that.
It is a complete structural inversion of how business has operated for over a century. I mean, if you look at the history of modern industry, scale always preceded capability.
You had to get big first.
Exactly. You had to hire the army, build the massive factories, rent the skyscrapers in Manhattan just to be able to do the actual work. You had to get big to get good.
Right.
But now, under AI native logic, that entire sequence is just flipped. Capability precedes scale.
Okay, let's unpack this because the implications here are, well, they're both terrifying and incredibly thrilling, depending on where you sit in the market.
Absolutely.
So for today's deep dive, we are pulling from a really fascinating stack of sources. Specifically, we're looking at the May 2026 dispatches from the Knowledge IP and Systems Lab at Audit Frontier Partners.
Authored by Doris Odit-Achenga, yeah.
Yes, authored by Doris Odit-Achenga. And these reports center on this terrifying but thrilling concept they are calling AI subsumption.
It's a heavy term, but it's very accurate.
It is. So our mission today is to figure out exactly how these AI native operators are rewriting the absolute laws of competitive physics. We want to understand how they are displacing legacy giants in weeks rather than years.
And why those giants don't even see it coming.
Right. Why the so-called elephants of these industries usually fail to notice until it is, quite frankly, far too late to do anything about it.
Well, to really grasp the mechanics of how a small, focused team can pull off a Thursday displacement, we have to start by looking closely at the legacy giants themselves, the elephants.
Right, the massive incumbents.
Yeah. For the past 100 years, a large industrial or digital firm relied heavily on its sheer institutional mass as its primary defense mechanism.
Like being huge was the strategy.
Exactly. If you wanted to compete with a global advertising agency or, say, a massive accounting firm, you couldn't just have a better idea.
You needed the army.
You needed thousands of analysts, deep, deep pockets, sprawling HR departments, layers of middle management. Mass created a moat. And building that RAS took a lot of time. Time and size were literally their armor.
And I mean, that makes total sense intuitively. If I want to fight an established army, I can't just show up on the battlefield with five really smart people.
No, you'd be crushed immediately.
Right. I need to spend years recruiting, training, and building supply lines just to even be taken seriously.
But that is exactly what the author calls the elephant problem. That institutional mass, it's incredibly heavy. AI fundamentally alters the minimum viable institutional mass required to be dangerous.
Because you just don't need the army
You
anymore.
really don't. And what's actually worse for the elephant is that their massive size is actively broadcasting their vulnerabilities.
And that leads perfectly into a concept from the source that I found just incredibly compelling: visibility exhaust.
Oh, it's such a great term.
It is. Legacy organizations are constantly emitting signals about exactly how their internal machinery works. To ground this in reality, imagine a massive global ad agency.
Right, sure.
They publish a 40-page white paper on their website detailing their quote-unquote proven 12-step methodology for routing global campaigns through legal and compliance.
Oh, they love doing that.
Right. Or they host webinars showing off their workflow software. They post these insanely detailed org charts on LinkedIn. And historically, they do all of this to build trust with their clients and, show authority in the market.
What's fascinating here is how drastically the interpretation of that data has shifted. An AI native disruptor does not read a 40-page methodology white paper to get inspired by the ad agency's brilliant creative strategy.
They don't care about the creative strategy at all.
Not even a little bit. They read it for organizational telemetry. They're actively mapping the elephant.
Wait, so if a legacy company publishes its comprehensive workflow methodology, are they basically handing a burglar the blueprints to the house?
In this new environment, yes, absolutely. Industrial era firms operated under the assumption that visibility created market advantage.
Because it showed they knew what they were doing.
Right. But to a fast-moving AI disruptor, that thought leadership is operational disclosure. They feed those blueprints into their models, and they ask a very specific, highly dangerous question.
Richard.
They ask which parts of this massive company only exist because older, legacy systems needed humans to route information.
Wow. I'm trying to wrap my head around this. So they aren't looking at the brilliant creative directors at the top?
No.
They are looking at the 400 mid-level coordinators whose only job is to take a slide deck, format it, email it to the legal department, wait for the approval, log it in a database, and then email it to the client.
Exactly that. They are hunting for where time accumulates, you know, where repetitive cognition dominates and where humans are functioning simply as biological routers, just moving data from point A to point B.
That is wild.
And once the disruptor maps those specific vulnerabilities, they initiate the attack. But, and this is vital to understand, they do not launch a frontal assault.
Right, because that would be traditional disruption.
Exactly. This is the core difference between traditional disruption and what the framework defines as subsumption.
Actually, let me stop you there.
Yeah.
Because the report uses the phrase institutional replacement through compression, which frankly sounds a bit like academic word salad.
That does sound a bit dense, yeah.
So in plain English, how does subsumption actually differ from the disruption we've seen in the tech industry for the last 20 years?
I mean, disruption is usually just competing within the existing market rules, right? Like someone making a better, cheaper taxi app.
That's a really great distinction. Disruption is basically taking the existing game and just playing it more efficiently. You are still trying to steal market share within the exact same boundaries. Yeah.
Subsumption is fundamentally different. The disruptor doesn't attack the elephant head on or even try to steal their largest clients right away. Instead, they build a much lighter, highly modular, AI-assisted replacement architecture right next door to the incumbent.
Side by side.
Yes. They take that 12-step compliance routing process you mentioned earlier, the one that takes the ad agency 3 weeks and 50 employees to do, and they compress it into an automated AI workflow that takes 3 seconds and zero employees.
So the legacy model doesn't just lose market share.
No, it simply becomes economically irrational to maintain. It makes no sense to keep paying for it.
You know, reading through these reports, I couldn't help but picture an old school video game. Like, think about playing Super Mario.
Oh, I like where this is going.
Yeah. So the traditional corporate way to play that game is to beat every single level sequentially. You grind for experience points. You play level one to hire the junior analyst. You play level two to build the HR department. And eventually, after years, you reach the boss.
Right.
But the AI disruptor, they are just searching for the hidden warp pipe.
Yes.
They use AI to bypass that sequential buildup entirely, skipping whole worlds. And the wildest part is that once they capture one workflow, they use that newly automated system as the foundational scaffolding to capture the next adjacent workflow.
Mm.
They literally just warp from pipe to pipe.
That is exactly it. And the pacing of how they move through those warp pipes is highly strategic. The framework calls it a rhythm of blitz and rest.
Blitz and arrest.
Yeah. Industrial firms are built for continuous, steady, predictable motion, right? Quarter after quarter of steady growth.
The usual corporate grind.
Right. AI organisms, however, operate in punctuated bursts. They blitz, which means they explosively deploy their compressed workflows to capture a specific territory or a tiny market niche.
Okay.
But then almost immediately, they intentionally go dark. They rest.
Wait, why slam on the brakes? If you've got the momentum and you're actively eating the elephant's lunch, shouldn't you just keep pushing?
Because continuous blitzing generates visibility exhaust.
Of course.
Right. If the AI organism stays on the offensive for too long, they start creating their own organizational telemetry, exposing their architecture to the broader market. So they rest to obscure their workflows.
They hide.
Exactly. They take that time to repair any internal coherence issues, stabilize their systems, and prepare for the next explosive burst. It is a highly calculated defensive mechanism.
But hold on, let's look at this from the elephant's perspective for a second.
Sure.
How does a massive company not feel these bites.
Yeah.
If a tiny startup is systematically eating their margins and stealing their smaller clients during these blitz phases, surely the CEO sounds the alarm, right? I mean, these companies have entire departments dedicated to competitive analysis and market intelligence.
This brings us to what the author calls the misdiagnosis stage, which is honestly genuinely tragic for the incumbent.
Because they completely miss the point.
Oh, they completely miss it. Yeah. The elephant absolutely feels the bite. The CEO looks at the dashboard and sees margin pressure, they see talent leaking, and they see pricing compression. The problem is how they interpret those signals.
Let me guess. They use the old industrial playbook to explain it.
Exactly. Because they are wearing industrial era lenses, they explain away the pain using comfortable, familiar language. They blame challenging macro conditions or cyclical headwinds or a temporary shift in consumer sentiment.
They blame the weather.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it is exactly like a biological ecosystem. Imagine a large animal getting inexplicably weaker.
And it assumes it's just a particularly harsh winter.
Right. So it decides to hunker down and conserve energy. It completely misses the reality that a new, hyper-efficient, invisible predator has quietly entered the ecosystem and is systematically consuming its food supply.
Wow. They misdiagnose structural subsumption as just a temporary cyclical weakness.
Yes.
And because the CEO thinks it's just a bad winter, they trigger all the wrong corporate responses. Like they implement a blanket hiring freeze or they schedule a 3-week executive strategy retreat in Aspen to figure out how to weather the storm.
Which is the absolute worst thing they could do.
Because that delay leads directly to the next phase of this conflict, which is tempo warfare.
Right.
Because by the time the elephant schedules a meeting to even discuss the macro headwinds, the startup has already blitzed, captured the margin, rested, and moved into the next market.
Precisely. Tempo warfare is the real battleground. The legacy firm is constrained by the speed of human consensus. They need steering committees and budget approvals just to react.
And the AI organism is bound only by computational limits.
Exactly.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The defining asymmetry in this war isn't actually about who has the smartest AI model or the most advanced neural network. It's strictly about adaptation speed.
Yes, the speed of adaptation.
It's like playing a game of chess against an opponent who gets to make 5 moves for every single one of your moves.
That's a brutal way to play chess.
Right. It does not matter if your pieces are physically stronger. It doesn't matter if you have all the rooks and the queen. By the time you reach out to move your pawn, they have already surrounded your king.
That is a perfect visualization of tempo warfare, and it answers a much deeper question about the changing nature of corporate competition.
Which is?
Well, for the entire 20th century, information was the ultimate competitive advantage. The firm with the most proprietary knowledge, the biggest R&D budget, the most exclusive data they won.
Because data was scarce.
Right. But today, information is entirely abundant. Anyone with an internet connection can synthesize market research instantly. So the new strategic asset is no longer information. It is coherence.
Coherence. I want to make sure we really nail this down. What does coherence mean in this specific context?
Coherence is the structural ability to filter, sequence, and orchestrate massive, overwhelming flows of raw intelligence into direct operational action without your organization breaking apart in the process.
Oh, I see.
It is no longer a battle of large versus small. It is coherent versus incoherent. The firm that can translate raw intelligence into a stabilized operational reality faster than anyone else is the one that survives.
So, listening to this, if you are sitting at a desk right now at a massive legacy ad agency or a corporate law firm, are you just doomed? I mean, are all legacy industries destined to be subsumed?
Not necessarily all of them. It depends entirely on the friction of your business model. Knowledge and intermediation firms are structurally exposed right now.
Because they just move data around.
Right. If your company's business model relies on the fact that information used to be scarce, synthesis used to be expensive, and coordination required layers of human management, you are sitting dead center in the subsumption zone.
Because the AI organism compresses all three of those things to basically zero.
Exactly. However, physical infrastructure firms think mining operations, global shipping logistics, agriculture, energy grids, they are defended by the heavy friction of physical reality.
But you can't just AI your way across the ocean.
Right. You cannot prompt engineer a physical cargo ship across the Pacific. Atoms are stubbornly hard to compress.
That makes sense.
Now, the administrative process layers surrounding those physical assets, those will absolutely be subsumed. But the physical mode itself remains at least until embodied AI and advanced robotics scale up.
Right. Once robots can physically interact with the world as cheaply as digital AI processes data, that physical friction begins to evaporate too.
Exactly.
Okay, so far this sounds heavily weighted in one direction. The legacy elephants look like slow-moving dinosaurs just waiting for the asteroid, and these fast-moving AI organisms sound like invincible ninjas.
It does seem that way at first glance.
But the framework actually points out a really important hidden symmetry here. The AI organisms have their own fatal disease. Where the industrial elephant slowly suffocates under accumulated bureaucracy, the hyperfast AI organism accumulates what the author calls compression debt.
This is a vital concept because it prevents us from overly romanticizing the disruptors. Speed without coherence is just fragility.
I really want to push back on this, though. I mean, I understand technical debt in traditional software engineering.
No, we're human coders take shortcuts.
Right, messy code buildup, and eventually the whole system breaks. But if these new AI systems are so impossibly lean, and they are utilizing highly advanced standardized models, how exactly do they collapse?
Wow.
Like, if you ask an AI to do a task, doesn't it just execute it perfectly every time?
It executes it confidently, but definitely not always perfectly. You have to remember what the disruptor actually did to get that speed. They compressed away all the human layers.
Okay.
Let's go back to your ad agency example. In the old days, a campaign pitch went from a junior copywriter to an art director to an account manager to the legal compliance team and finally to the client. It was agonizingly slow. It was highly bureaucratic.
But it worked.
It worked because that massive bureaucracy acted as a structural error dampener.
An error dampener?
Yes. Multiple sets of human eyes, all with different incentives, caught the typos, the logical flaws, the culturally insensitive jokes, and the legal liabilities. When an AI organism uses a warp pipe to compress that entire chain into a single automated workflow, it also permanently removes the error dampeners.
So by stripping out the bureaucracy just to move faster, they are actually accelerating the rate at which they can make catastrophic, reality-detached mistakes.
Exactly. And that is what compression debt actually is. It manifests as prompt sprawl, where a startup has 50 different versions of an automated workflow running simultaneously, and literally no one knows which one is accurate.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It looks like wildly inconsistent logic or hallucinated institutional memory, where the AI confidently invents a client's preference out of thin air. If an AI organism compresses a business without actively building a replacement for that old bureaucracy, it will confidently ship absolute nonsense at the speed of light.
So you mentioned building a replacement for the bureaucracy. The report talks about architecting verification. What does that actually look like in practice?
Mm-hmm.
How do you fix compression debt without just, you know, hiring all the middle managers back?
Well, you have to engineer verification into the system itself. This requires two distinct layers. First is the digital layer. This involves mechanisms like adversarial testing. That's where you literally build a second AI model whose only job is to try to break, trick, or find flaws in the output of your first model. You use automated anomaly detection to flag when an output strays from historical norms.
So basically having the machines check the machines.
Right.
What's the second layer?
The physical layer. You need reality actively pushing back against the models. This means integrating real-time customer behavior, hard operational metrics, and very tight human judgment loops.
Humans still matter.
Very much so. The digital layer catches what the model can conceptually see. The physical layer catches what the model is completely blind to. If you don't have reality pushing back, your beautifully compressed system will just drift off into a highly efficient fantasy world.
And while the AI organism is battling its own compression debt just to stay tethered to reality, the elephant isn't necessarily just rolling over and dying. The framework outlines that legacy firms can actually fight back through counter-subsumption.
Subsumption is not inevitable. The elephant still possesses massive, tangible advantages.
All right, they aren't powerless.
Not at all. They have decades of consumer trust, deep corporate treasuries, and deeply entrenched distribution networks. And they can leverage these. One really powerful method is regulatory capture.
How does a giant corporation use regulatory capture against a tiny five-person startup?
They lobby the government.
Oh, of course.
The elephant can advocate for incredibly strict data privacy laws or mandate that any software used in their industry requires a multi-million dollar compliance certification. A company with 5,000 employees and a massive legal team can absorb that cost easily.
But the five-person AI startup cannot.
Exactly. The elephant effectively outlaws the disruptor's lean model. Alternatively, the elephant can just acquire the startup while it's still small, or achieve a kind of symbiosis where the disruptor's technology quietly becomes the back-end infrastructure for the elephant's brand. The battle is highly strategic.
So what does this all mean, like, for the actual people involved? We've talked deeply about systems, architectures, and algorithms, but this structural war fundamentally alters what makes a human worker valuable in the economy.
It really does.
The source brings up this compelling concept of the master crafter.
And this raises an incredibly important question about human capital. There is a persistent societal myth right now that AI is a great equalizer.
That it makes everyone equally capable.
Exactly. But it does not. AI dramatically amplifies execution capacity, but execution capacity is not the same thing as judgment.
Because, as we established with compression debt, speed is not correctness.
Right. The AI native system dramatically amplifies the value of the master crafter. That's the human operator who actually possesses the deep expertise to know what good looks like.
Which makes sense.
If an AI agent can generate a highly complex financial merger model in 3 seconds, the human being reviewing that output still needs a profound understanding of asset valuation, liability structures, and nuanced market dynamics to know if the AI is just hallucinating.
So the AI does not grant you judgment.
No, it fiercely leverages the judgment you already possess.
But wait, this feels like a massive contradiction.
How so?
Well, if the AI is absorbing all the junior level drudgery work, the drafting of the memos, the formatting of the slide decks, the basic data synthesis, all the grunt work we traditionally handed to the 22-year-old new hires.
Right.
How do we train the next generation of master crafters? Didn't today's masters learn exactly by doing that grunt work?
You've just hit on what the author identifies as the most dangerous unresolved issue in this entire framework. They call it the apprentice problem.
Let's explore that. Why is it so dangerous?
Because for generations, we categorized that junior level drudgery simply as cheap labor. But it wasn't just labor, it was our hidden training infrastructure.
Wow.
That repetitive grunt work is exactly how human beings build pattern recognition. It is how we develop institutional intuition and context. When you spend 2 years formatting 100 pitch decks, you aren't just making slides look pretty.
You are internalizing the geometry of a persuasive argument.
Yes. You are learning how a narrative flows.
So if we completely eliminate the bottom rungs of the corporate ladder just to save money and compress the workflow, we are just cutting costs.
No.
We are actively destroying the pipeline that creates the masters.
We are destabilizing the transmission of human knowledge entirely. If we automate the entire middle of the process, we are left with a hollowed out system. You have an AI doing all the execution, overseen by a handful of aging master crafters doing the verification, with absolutely no one coming up behind them to take their place.
We can't just ignore the human element.
We cannot just automate away the drudgery, declare a victory for efficiency, and wash our hands of the training process. We have to deliberately redesign what apprenticeship looks like in an age where the grunt work is gone, but the necessity for deep, unassailable human judgment is higher than ever.
That is a profound structural challenge. Thank you so much for exploring the mechanics of this with me today.
It was a pleasure.
And to you, the learner, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We've unpacked a thrilling and frankly daunting reality today. We have officially entered the age of institutional compression.
Things are moving incredibly fast.
You no longer need decades to become dangerous. Capability now precedes scale. But to survive this shift, whether you were trying to turn around a massive legacy elephant or you were building a stealthy AI organism from your garage, you need coherence.
Absolutely.
You need rigorous verification architectures to keep reality in check. And you need to be hyper-aware of your own visibility exhaust, or you accidentally handing the blueprints of your vulnerabilities to the market.
And as you think about how these new rules of physics apply to your own daily workflows, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over.
Oh, please do.
If AI commoditizes the tools of execution, but exponentially amplifies the value of deep judgment, What is a specific area in your own life or career where you are currently relying on an algorithm to do the drudgery?
Oh, that's a tough question.
And by outsourcing that friction, might you be silently robbing yourself of the very pattern recognition you will need to be a master tomorrow?
Monday morning is coming. Make sure you know what you're building by Thursday.